You're listening to episode 54 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Chang.
Am I doing this right?
Hi, I'm your host, Yin Chang, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
Hey, Storyteller Tribe, before we get into today's interview, I wanted to thank Vermont College of Fine Arts for sponsoring today's episode. Their MFA writing program has been around for 35 years. At the end of the show, you'll find out why they're ranked one of the best low residency writing programs in the country. I have a huge announcement to make. This Monday, August 8th, 88 Cups of Tea is reaching a very special milestone. We are turning 1 year old. I can't believe how incredible this community is, all thanks to you listeners and the amazing guests who've been on the show. To celebrate with you guys, we'll be hosting an exclusive giveaway contest where 8 lucky winners will receive a box filled with thoughtfully curated gifts. I'm super excited about this because I carefully selected each and every item in the box with intentions to inspire and awaken your creative soul. The contest starts on August 8th and ends on August 15th. If you want a chance to win this epic giveaway, be sure to read the directions for this giveaway on our social media at 88 Cups of Tea. Now on to today's episode. A lot of you amazing listeners have been asking for more literary agents on the show. So as if I wasn't excited enough, I'm even more so now. We have the awesome Molly Jaffa, literary agent and co-director of international rights at Folio Literary Management. She represents a small and extremely selective list of authors so she can focus quality time and energy on each of them. One of her clients being Julie Murphy, the young adult author of Dumplin', which debuted at number one on the New York Times bestseller list, is now currently having her book developed into a movie by Disney. You'll learn so much from Molly's episode about the hard work it takes to succeed as a literary agent and how agents are as emotionally invested in the books as their clients are. Of course, we dive into query letters, what stands out to Molly, and how to write unique queries. Let's jump right in. Hey everyone, we have Molly Jaffa here with us today. I'm very excited to have her on the show. Molly, what's up? How are you?
Hello, thank you so much for having me, lady. What is up?
The ceiling, hey. Okay. No.
Oh, snap.
Yes, middle school humor. Where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Dallas, Texas, but I've been in New York since I was in college, so I am now officially a New Yorker. It's been over 10 years now. I think that's the cutoff point. So now I live in Brooklyn, and I work at Folio Literary Management in Manhattan.
What school did you go to?
I went to Sarah Lawrence College. It is right outside of Manhattan, and I actually started working at Folio when I was in college. If any of your listeners are interested in becoming a literary agent or, you know, knowing how that works, most of us get into the industry through an internship. It's very much an apprenticeship business. So it's all about getting to know people and sort of training under people who have more experience than you. There's no real official school that you go to become a literary agent or any particular training that you need to get in college. For me, I was studying literature at school and I got an internship at Folio my sophomore year. By the time I was a junior in college, I was completely in love with it. I knew it's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life was to be an advocate for authors and really help make their dreams come true. So I ended up working full-time at Folio from my junior year on, and I never left. I sold my first book the summer before my senior year of college. When I graduated, they promoted me to the director of foreign rights department, and now I get to travel the world pitching foreign publishers our books for translation, in addition to selling my own clients' rights in the U.S.
Usually people get into your career because they wanted to write at first for themselves and mm-hmm. be authors, and then realize, okay, maybe this is not really my thing. Was that the similar background for you, where you were interested in storytelling and writing, and then it just kind of suddenly transitioned or formed and morphed into having an interest in interning at a literary agency?
So I think there are two kinds of people who ends up being agents. One of them is definitely the writer type, and the other is the ex-theater kid type, and I am the latter. You would be so surprised how many former actors, musicians, musical theater performers end up as literary agents, because we really love connecting with people, we love sharing stories, but we also love kind of the performative aspect of our business and being able to pitch to publishers and to travel and meet authors in person and really connect with them. There's definitely a vestige of theater kid in a lot of us. Folio, for example, example, regularly goes out to Marie's Crisis, which is a gay show tunes bar in New York. And we all sing around the piano together. It's really spectacular. So when I was a kid, I wanted to be an actor. As I got older, I realized that was just not going to be my jam. So here I am. This is what I love to do.
Did you do theater in college for a little bit in the beginning of freshman sophomore year?
I did until I started working at Folio full time. I had to quit an all-female production of Romeo and Juliet to pursue my dream of agenting. I definitely made the right call.
Basically, you can bust out a mean tune if you want to.
We were at Marie's Crisis this past Wednesday at 3 a.m. singing something from Godspell, like half of Folio.
Do you ever go karaokeing with your clients?
I haven't been with my clients yet. We do sing a lot when we get together, but never in an official capacity. I have gone to karaoke with editors, though, and that's really fun.
What is one thing that is really exciting you about your work right now?
Oh, man, just one?
I know it's hard. Okay, your top two or top three?
I represent the amazing Julie Murphy, who wrote a young adult novel called Dumplin', which debuted at number one on the New York Times bestseller list last year.
Congratulations.
And I just, thank you. She's just amazing. I love her so much. And I have just read the movie script for Dumplin', which was the first time I'd been able to read a script based on one of my author's books. It's in development at Disney right now. So just seeing those words on the page, I cried three times at least. I was like squeezing my cat and crying. So that was amazing. And then other thing, I have a novel I'm about to send out to publishers that I signed actually through a diversity pitching event on Twitter that was called DV Pit. And that was sort of by and about for authors of color or authors who are LGBT. I signed this amazing woman who's writing a novel that is set in present day Salem. And it's about a witch who is out as being a witch, but she is not out about being a lesbian just yet to certain people. And some people know that she's gay, but they don't know that she's a witch. So she's in and out of the closet in various ways. It's a really incredible story, and I'm so excited to send that one to some of my favorite editors this fall.
I'd be one of the first people lining up on the block waiting for that book. With Julie Murphy's book, do you shepherd it to people to pitch, to turn it into a script? How does that work?
It can work in a variety of ways. Typically, we try to get a film co-agent on board first. So Julie has a film co-agent, just like she has me to handle her U.S. rights. She has an agent who handles her film rights. The film co-agent shopped it around and was the one who paired the book up with Disney. And since then, they've gotten a producer and a writer on board. So we are all keeping our fingers crossed that it continues moving forward.
It's not always a guarantee, right?
I usually just tell my authors to pretend that they don't even have a movie deal. Just try not to think about it. Film is such a crazy process, even far crazier than publishing, and publishing's pretty wild. So, you know, if it happens, it happens, but that's certainly not, you know, the be-all, end-all. I'm just focused on getting my author's books out there in the world, and a movie would be the icing on the cake.
Exactly. That reminds me so much of being an actor, where it's like you shot a pilot, but then you're waiting to be greenlit, so you just gotta hold your breath. You're in New York. Do you see yourself anywhere else?
I do travel a lot for work. I just got back from Muncie, Indiana last week for a writer's conference, but I go to Bologna, Frankfurt, London every year for the international book fairs. So it's nice to have New York as sort of a home base to come back to. Someday, my fiance and I want to move upstate and have a farm and come back to the city every once in a while. He's also a literary agent at Folio, John Cusick.
Is this a guy that you were tweeting about that cooks really well?
Yeah. He's my coworker / fiance. We cook together all the time.
That gives me life because I'm such a huge foodie. I love cooking with my girlfriend, and she actually cooks way more than I do, and that's surprising. That brings me so much joy to see that you guys are cooking together.
We do pretend Top Chef mystery boxes. One of us goes to the grocery store and picks four weird ingredients, and the other has an hour to make something out.
When you gave him the four items, artichoke and the cheese and the cracker, what, Lunchable box?
Oh, yeah, he had to make something out of Lunchables.
And then he made that lamb taco. I'm like, what?
He marinated the lamb partially and some of the Capri Sun from the Lunchable box, and it was actually really good.
Since we're on this track, I need to know, what were four ingredients that he told you?
He gave me a pre-made falafel, some soba noodles, soybeans, and something totally random. I think maybe it was just pork, and I ended up making egg rolls out of it, and then frying up the soba noodles with some of the crumbs from the falafel, and it was actually pretty good. It was like breadcrumbs. It was crunchy.
Why are you so good at cooking? Where did this come from?
Hopefully a lot of writers can relate to this too. I think that when you work in publishing or you're a writer, you are always working on something, and you very rarely have anything physical to show for it. It's so long until you get to hold up a book and say, I made this or I contributed to this. And so I think it's very calming and helpful to have a hobby that produces something immediate that you can enjoy. So for me, that's really why I got into cooking, was because publishing is such a hurry up and wait business that I wanted something that I could sit down and after, you know, 30 minutes, an hour, I could say, aha, I have made this thing.
I hear how insane your job can be. And you've tweeted something which was so funny. I actually busted out laughing. You were saying,
oh, no.
If I'm out of the office or if I don't answer for a few days, people think I'm pregnant. And that's,
yeah, it's very true.
I didn't realize that till what you wrote, and it just really hit home.
Because I do international rights at Folio, I usually start the day pretty early so that I can be online at the same time as Europe and some of Asia. So I get up, you know, maybe 5:30 or 6 and check my foreign emails. If there are any deals to negotiate on that front, then I will do that first thing so that I can have a nice back and forth correspondence or jump on the phone with, you know, Germany or France or whatever if need be. And then I will get ready for work, maybe get out the door around 9 or 10. The one really great thing about publishing is that no one gets in early. We all just kind of roll into the office when we feel like it. So I get to work. I have a lovely intern and assistants at Folio that are super helpful and help us with the mail and contracts and bring us things to look at. But usually in the office, I'm dealing with contract issues for clients. I'm reading contracts for deals that have been done recently. I'm going over an edit letter that their editor has sent them because the client maybe has a question or wants to see what I think. I'm advising clients on the way their cover comps look, the blurbs that they've gotten, how to get endorsements for their book. So most of the day is client management, contracts, maybe dealing with some foreign tax forms and the IRS, which is always thrilling. I have an interpretive dance I do in my chair to the IRS hold music. You got to make the day go by somehow. And then most days I have either a lunch meeting with an editor or a drinks date with an editor. And that's something that we do, not just because we love eating and drinking, but because it is important for agents to get to know what kind of books editors are looking for. Or if somebody, say, grew up as a ballerina, you know, maybe if you're working on a novel with a ballerina, that would be a great fit, for example. So that's something that's always a part of our day. And I come home and probably watch some MasterChef, do some client reading, look at some query letters, and then maybe I'll jump back online around 9 or 10 to see if I've heard anything from Taiwan or maybe Australia, and then go to bed.
I love that you mentioned Taiwan because my dad's Taiwanese.
My Taiwanese co-agent, his name is Gray Tan and he is a badass. He has his own agency and he's actually the person who first translated Game of Thrones novels into complex Chinese. So it was like, I don't know, like 15 or something years ago before the books were even a TV series or a huge deal.
Oh my God.
He's my favorite person in the universe. Every time I see him, we have this like bird pose that we do. So when we're in Frankfurt and we see each other across the room, we make this bird pose and caw really loudly. I felt like the Germans and the French are looking at us like, what are those people?
Have you actually been to Taiwan yourself?
I haven't. I would love to go. I would love to go. I mean, there's so many international fairs I'd like to go to. I'm hoping actually to go to South Korean Book Fair next year in Seoul. That would be really cool.
But I didn't even realize that they had book fairs and all that in Taiwan and South Korea because I don't really hear about it.
Mostly for kind of publishers who are in that area, but sometimes American agents do go if they have a list that is really suitable for those markets.
What brings you around the world? You are meeting with other publishers and networking and also separately, I guess, writers' conferences to find new clients.
Since I'm the co-director of foreign rights at Folio, that means when an agent sells a book to a publisher in the US, they can either give the publisher translation rights for the publisher to handle, or the agent can retain them and handle them on behalf of the author. If the agent retains them, long story short, the author is generally going to make more money and get paid more quickly. Mm-hmm. So we try to do that whenever possible. And that's something that Folio is really bullish about. So every day I am in contact with foreign publishers and negotiating deals. On average, we do about a deal a day or every other day. So it's a really high volume of business. But there are three magical times a year when everyone in the international publishing industry gets together. And that's Frankfurt in October, and then Bologna and London, which are in March and April. Bologna is just children's books and the other two are both adult and children's. And so what the fair looks like from an agent's perspective for pretty much the entire week, say like Monday through Saturday in Frankfurt, I am at a table and every 30 minutes, a foreign publisher comes up to me. We have meetings scheduled in advance. My schedule has been booked since the end of June. So every 30 minutes, Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to about 6 p.m., I'm meeting with a different publisher, catching up with them, hearing what's working well for them, what's selling best, what they're looking for. And I will pitch them maybe two or three of the books on our list of hundreds of books that I think sound exactly right for what they're looking for. And that's based on what I know about their own market successes, what's selling well for us here, you know, what the biggest trends are already or are going to be. So every market is a little bit different. You know, the way I would pitch a book to a German publisher is not the same way I would pitch a book to a Japanese publisher. In fact, I would probably rarely even pitch them the same book. So that's what I'm doing all day. And then after that, I usually have a drinks meeting with a foreign editor, somebody that I'm, you know, really close to from years and years of going to book fairs. Then I usually have a dinner meeting. And then everyone goes to this place in Frankfurt called the Frankfurter Hof, which is this crazy hotel where everyone stays until about 4 a.m. exchanging gossip and talking about, you know, what the big books are going to be. And then everyone goes to bed and does it again the next morning.
Woo! I just feel like I've traveled around the world with you. You're going on your own because you are the only one in your position in your company, I'm assuming.
Sometimes I go with my colleague, Melissa. There are 20-something agents at Folio now. I think officially we call it 22. So we go and we each have our own separate table and we take our own meetings. But together, I mean, we all read every single book that we represent. So I handle half the agents and she handles half the agents. But at the end of the day, I have read every single book that we have translation rights to and I can pitch them.
Do you look forward to these trips or is it more of a stressful, holy crap, I gotta get a lot of research and all that information down packed?
And the more you do it, the more relaxing and fun it gets. It's just seeing your very best friends that you only get to see 3 times a year. It's really my favorite part of my job, aside from, of course, working directly with my amazing authors, whom I love.
If there was an ideal, perfect agent/author relationship in your mind, what would that be like?
So I do work very closely with my authors. Typically, you know, I offer representation only a handful of times a year. I do get hundreds of submissions every month, so I go through those very carefully and request a few of them. If I just fall in love with a manuscript, you know, if I can't put it down, if I can't think about anything else, if I forget to eat or, God forbid, forget to make myself a martini after work... then I know that this, is something I have to have. But I will usually, you know, call the author, I'll speak to them, see if we're kind of on the same page with our vision for the work, because it's really important that an author and an agent have the same editorial vision for a project, that I don't want to take their book in a direction that they're uncomfortable with. So once we've established that, I'll offer. Hopefully they will pick me among all the other agents who will also be interested. And then I go back and I read their work and I will write them an editorial letter, which is basically, you know, a couple of pages in a Word document that talks about how we can improve the manuscript, whether it's looking at the pacing or maybe, you know, should we combine a few of these secondary characters that don't all need to be in the story? Then we will discuss it some more. They'll do some edits and we will keep doing that until we really both think that it's as strong as it can possibly be. And we'll send it out on submission. Hopefully that will result in an offer or several offers. And then after that, that's really kind of where I feel like my job begins as an agent. You know, people think an agent's job is just to sell the book and be done. But I am intimately involved with every aspect of the publishing process after that. I stay CC'd on my author's correspondence with their editor to give them, you know, tips, kind of a heads up on how to be the best debut author they can be. Because every author wants to be a success as a debut, but they've never done it before. So one of the things that I can offer my clients as an agent is my own experience on, you know, what works best with a publisher, how to get marketing and publicity on your side, things like that. I'm always there for my clients. You know, I have clients who prefer not to be in touch that often, and we talk maybe once a month if they're not having, you know, any major active issues. And then I have clients I talk to every day. I have clients who drunk text me. I have all kinds of clients. I do keep my work phone forwarded to my cell phone. So if there was an emergency or something in the middle of the night, they would definitely be able to reach me.
Oh my God, you're so nice.
They're my clients. I love them.
That's so sweet. I'd be like, girl, bye Felicia. It is 6 p.m. I'm going home and I'm going to cook myself a meal and I'm sleeping. That's awesome. Well, at least we know you're way nicer than I am. I love that.
Well, I save all my, you know, like mean and scary side for when I have to negotiate with editors.
That sexy though. Like that's so awesome where you're like so sweet with your clients and it's like, rawr. It's like totally like pulling a Growlithe from Pokemon move. It's like, rawr.
I just caught one of those recently. Actually. Oh my God, yes.
Wait, you're playing Pokemon? Stop.
Of course I am.
Girl, even I'm not playing Pokemon.
I grew up playing Pokemon on Game Boy. So like there was no choice. I had to see what that's true. Was about.
I mean, sometimes I will, you know, sneak over when I see my girlfriend playing and I'm just like throwing a ball here and there. And then when I see a Growlithe, I'm like, oh, it's so cute. But totally, you remind me of a Growlithe. That is awesome. Okay, so these negotiations, I am so curious. Maybe this is something to ask the person who promoted you. Like, what made you stand out for them to be like, oh, she'd be really good with negotiations? Because you've got to be like aggressive with that, I'm assuming, right?
To be a literary agent, you have to be really entrepreneurial and you have to be really aggressive. It's not the kind of job for somebody who has a personality where they sort of sit back and wait for good things to come to them. You really have to be hustling and you have to be able able to do it independently because there's no one standing over your shoulder saying, hey, have you offered representation lately? You're sort of on your own. So I think, you know, I've always just been really aggressive. I've always been looking for great projects to sign. I keep a really small client list, a really boutique list. I'm super selective. But what I do sign, I have a great track record selling and selling in a big way. So that's just been my experience thus far, really just hustling. Every day I'm hustling, you know.
You do have a really selective list and you have a really good track record. What stands out to you to then be like, wow, I need to have this client on my list?
The first time that happened to me actually was with Julie Murphy's first book, because 11 agents ended up offering on Julie's first book. Yeah. So, and I was a pretty new agent when that happened. And I remember she queried me on a Saturday. I read it that same day. I remember sitting in a Starbucks on my laptop and reading it. I'm up on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And more or less, the opening of the query was, you know, it's a YA novel about a girl named Alice who's been diagnosed with cancer, given 6 months to live. So she gets the help of her best boyfriend, Harvey, who's always been in love with her, to get revenge on everyone who has ever wronged her. So she does that. She ends up sleeping with Harvey because, hey, she's going to die anyway. And then the novel begins when she finds out she's in remission and she's not going to die after all. Obviously, Julie wrote that in a much better way than I just explained it. But immediately, it was like, oh my God, this girl has burned all her bridges. She slept with her best friend. She's totally ready to die. And then, oh shit, like, I'm not going to die. How do I put my life back together now? Who do I want to be now that I get the second chance at life? And so that was a really succinct way to describe the stakes of the novel. I already knew, you know, really what to expect from it, and it sounded fresh and different. So anything that's like that, that just feels unique in that way, usually I don't even really get past maybe the second or third sentence of a query letter. In two or three sentences, you've probably told me the title, the genre, the word count, and maybe two or three sentences about what it's about and what kind of books it's similar to. And I think that sounds really harsh, but because I only sign a few clients a year, I'm going to be really selective, like I said. But also, you have to keep in mind that when an agent signs a book, from the time we sign it to the time it's published, we might read that manuscript like 15 to 20 times with a super fine tooth comb, going back and forth, doing edits. I can probably quote you most of my clients' novels off the top of my head. That's how often I read them. So it can't just be, oh, this is something that I think could be successful. It has to be a project that I can really see myself investing years of my life in and reading that many times and getting really intimate with those characters, which means if it seems like it has a lot of promise, but I just am not that interested in the concept. I don't like stories about boys and their dogs, for example. I find that boring as hell. So even if it was the best novel ever about a boy and his dog, I would be like, meh, next.
What if it's about a boy and his huge, fluffy orange cat?
Yes, I would read that. I have a cat. He is 18 pounds and his name is Donut and he is a superstar.
So you would have definitely brought on the author who wrote Garfield. So that's good.
Yes, I would have.
These query letters, you mentioned that in the beginning, they'll mention like who they are, where they're from, and then two or three sentences, just starting in their summary about their book. Is that the generic way that you prefer to be queried to?
The typical query format, what most agents teach at writers' conferences or talk about on their blog, is to say, you know, dear agent, I have written a X word count and then genre novel called blank. Dear Miss Jaffa, I've written a 75,000 word YA novel called My Cat Donut. And then one sentence maybe about what it's about. So in My Cat Donut, Donut realizes that he is too fluffy to fit through the back door and decides to start a jazzercise regimen. And it will appeal to fans of Garfield and superhero movies. Just that succinct to sort of the beginning paragraph. You just want to tell the agent the very basics of your novel's title, how many words it is, what genre it's in, whether that's like adult mystery or YA fantasy, and maybe a little bit about who it would appeal to, fans of book A or book B or author A or author B. Even movies are okay. Like you wanted to say, it's Mean Girls meets X-Men. If one of the X-Men was an orange cat, that would work totally fine. And then, of course, the second paragraph should be like a short little pitch of your novel. Usually the third paragraph is a brief biography of you, and then you just close off and send it out into the ether.
You said you only have a very small selective group you manage and take care of. So it's a very slim chance for most people to get selected or brought on. With these courtesy letters, is that usually right away?
I used to send form rejection letters and I have stopped doing that for two reasons. One is that I was spending several hours a day doing them and that's time away from my clients and it's my primary job to take care of them. And two, I got far too many emails that were like, screw you, bitch, you're missing the next Harry Potter. Or I hope you die. Just really awful, what? Like misogynistic crap. I decided I didn't really want to get any more of those and I wanted to spend more time with my clients. So now it's a no response means no if you don't hear from me. And I think my website says 8 weeks. So I wish I had all the time in the world to respond, but I don't have an assistant. I read all my queries myself. If something doesn't appeal to me, I just hit delete, which I realize sucks. I really do wish I had more time in the day, but hopefully if and when any of your listeners are my client someday, they will appreciate that I'm spending the extra time on them.
I can't believe that they would send replies that are so fucking rude.
It's pretty bad. We do put up with a lot of crap.
Was there anyone that compelled you enough to even write one personal rejection letter?
It happens all the time that I see something where I love the writing, but I don't think that the concept feels really fresh enough or unique enough to stand out in this competitive market. So sometimes I'll write people back and say, hey, I love your writing. This concept's not quite for me. If you don't find representation with this project and you write something else, I would love to hear from you again. And sometimes if I really like something, but maybe it's too similar to something else on my list and I don't want those two books competing with each other, I will send it to a colleague and say, hey, do you want to take a look at this? And we are really collaborative at Folio. We do share things with each other. So if something is good and it comes to me, even if I'm not quite able to take it on, I try my best to find a way for something good to happen to that author because, you know, true talent is rare and we definitely want to embrace it.
That's so sweet. And I didn't realize that you guys try to avoid things that are too similar to client works that you already have. I thought it would be in the writer's favor to write something that is similar to what's already successful that you have.
Depends on how similar. If I have a novel about a beauty pageant, I probably don't want another novel about a beauty pageant, especially if they both deal with themes of body image and identity and that sort of thing, because they're so similar that people might confuse the two books. Instead of buying the first book, somebody might say, oh, I'm going to buy that author's book instead. It sort of sets up a weird competition between your authors, and you don't want that to happen. But if I represent one novel that's a love story set in New York, I'm totally happy to see another love story set in New York, as long as they don't both have protagonists with the same name who both live in the same neighborhood. So gotcha. It really just depends on how similar they are. We just don't want our authors to compete with each other and take away from each other's sales.
That's good to know. Thank you. Molly, what's the most difficult or frustrating thing about being an agent?
Man, rejection. Absolutely rejection. I think that, you know, agents get rejected just as much as writers do. Once we take on a project and we send it to editors, you know, every rejection we get is just an arrow through the heart, and it's so upsetting when you love something and an editor doesn't love it. We also get turned down by writers. You know, sometimes multiple agents will offer representation to something that we've fallen in love with and they will choose another agent. So rejection is, it's a really tough thing that's unfortunately prevalent on both sides of this business, but I really definitely want writers to know that we are down there in the trenches with them and we understand how much it hurts when somebody doesn't seem to appreciate what you've put out in the world. So we're here for you. We really know how it feels. I'm sending you a big hug through the internet, writers. Aww. We love you.
I would love to know, because we were talking about you traveling a lot. You know, you just got back from Muncie. That's the writer's conference. Are there any writer's conferences that are close, near and dear to your heart that have stood out to you and you've just remembered really good positive experiences from it?
I love DFWCon, which is in Dallas-Fort Worth. Happens every year. And there's a great community of writers there. I'll say the best writer's conference I ever went to was the Nebraska Writers Conference, which took place in a monastery in rural Nebraska, run
what?
By German monks.
That's amazing.
And then I would say anything run by the SCBWI, which is the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. Writers can know that that's a really good conference to go to, and you're definitely going to meet reputable agents and editors there.
Do you have any thoughts on how writers can improve their craft? Just hearing about Julie Murphy's, how she sent her query letter to you, it just sounds like her craft is very strong. Do you have any advice on that for writers who maybe they have a great idea, but they're struggling a little bit on executing?
Julie actually queried me for another novel before her first novel, and I rejected that one. So first of all, don't give up.
Interesting.
Definitely don't give up. Definitely keep working on your craft. Number one, read as many novels as you can in your genre and try to read the ones that you see on the New York Times bestseller list that are selling really well. You know, if you want to write YA and you haven't read a recently published YA novel, get yourself to the bookstore because that will really help you. Read flap copy, which is, you know, on the insides of a book or on the back. See how the publisher describes that book, because a lot of times that copy is even taken from the author's initial query letter to the agent. Some of those same phrases will have come from a query letter and then from how the agent pitched the book to the editor. So you can sort of practice pitching your book based on what you see on flap copy. It's definitely one way to do it. So I would say, you know, read, really hone your query letter, get a critique partner if you can. There are lots of websites and message boards that will help you do that. And never give up. Never surrender.
Thank you, Molly. It was really inspiring to hear that you actually turned down her first query letter.
I did. And I didn't even know. She confessed to me like a year later. And I was so embarrassed. I had no idea. So really, I mean, you know, keep working on your craft. Don't give up.
Let me know if there's anything you want to share with listeners. This is your time. This is your platform.
Oh, thank you. No, I would love to hear from any of you guys who are querying YA, middle grade, whether it's contemporary, historical, fantasy. I really am looking to actively build my list. So please give me a shot and check out foliolit.com if you want to learn more about me and my colleagues, who are also awesome.
And any books that we should look out that you had a hand in?
Yeah, Paula Garner's Phantom Limbs is coming out from Candlewick this fall. And it's about a boy and a girl who were best friends growing up until one day they witnessed the death of his little brother. They both feel responsible for it. So she moves away and he hasn't been in contact with her for 5 long years. Now they're 17. She's coming back to town and he's hoping that he can rekindle the flame between them. But first they have to confront the death of his little brother. And it's just a really beautiful, compelling literary YA novel that I think will move anyone to tears. So please check out Phantom Limbs in September if you get a chance.
I'm really excited for that. Molly, you've been amazing.
Thank you so much. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you. You're awesome. And give your cat a huge hug for me, Mr. Donut.
I'm gonna go do that right now.
He's so cute. You need to post photos of him on Twitter.
I have an Instagram if anybody wants to check out my Instagram.
Oh my god, John, I'm gonna be stalking your cat. Oh my gosh, I'm so obsessed with pets. You have no idea. I
understand. I'm right there with you.
Hey guys, okay, that wraps up our interview with the awesome Molly Jaffa. And yes, you guys need to check out the adorable photos of her fluffy orange cat named Donut. You can find her on Instagram at Molly Jaffa. Molly, thank you for sharing so much and for being so encouraging and supportive of authors. You are awesome. Storyteller Tribe, thank you for listening in as always, and I hope Molly's episode really inspired you to take action with your writing. Please say hi to Molly over on Twitter at Molly_Jaffa. For the list of books and resources she mentions in her episode, like the writing conferences that were brought up, be sure to head over to 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/MollyJaffa. At the top of the show, you heard me talk a little bit about Vermont College of Fine Arts. I am so excited to share a bit about them. I know there's a lot of you who are really interested in writing books for children or young adults, so you'll definitely want to pay special attention to what Vermont College of Fine Arts has to offer. VCFA has 3 different graduate level programs for writers, and I'll be going into detail about their program called Writing for Children and Young Adults. Students meet up twice a year on their gorgeous campus in the heart of historic Montpelier in Vermont for intensive 10-day residencies. It's a lot like 10-day retreats for writers, and you guys know how much I love retreats. Imagine attending VCFA's MFA program where you'll be immersed in an amazing writing community filled with intensive workshops, lectures, panel discussions, and readings that are always challenging and inspiring you. After the life-changing experiences at the residencies, you and the faculty will design your own course for the start of the semester by really zoning in on your specific writing goals. Throughout the semester, you'll continue working with faculty mentors through telephone conferences, emails, and letters. So basically, you're receiving one-on-one mentorship throughout your semester as you take control in shaping the kind of education you want out of your time with VCFA. Check out 88cupsoftea.com/VCFA for more info. Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye!